Okay, we're continuing in the Mesillas Yesharim with the commentary of the Bilvavi Mishkan Evna. We are on page Reish Aleph. We are continuing with the words of the Mesillas Yesharim on page Reish Aleph, right a little below the middle, and it's the words in the bold words. He says, Kirak Zehu Atov, because only this is the ultimate good. What is that? He's referring back to what King David said, that King David says, Vani Kivras Elohim Li Tov, being close to Hashem is good. Dveikus. So that's the only good. V'chol zu lazeh she'achshavu b'nei adam l'tov, and anything else that a human being thinks is good, eino ela hevel v'shav nite. It is only nothingness and completely mistaken and wrong. So Lutzaro is adding in this clause that the only thing that you can really say is good in this world is being close to Hashem. Anything else that we imagine is good is completely wrong. And now he's going to explain that. So Bilvavi explains. Hatov ha'yachid she'eshnu ba'olam hu ha'anoa, ha'is'angus, ha'kirva, ha'dveikas, b'bori olam, v'chol ha'sher hu hevel v'shovnita. The singular good in this world is the pleasure, delight, and closeness, and attachment to Hashem. Everything else is not. It's false. Zelum ha'zeh asol kim. We have a rule that Hashem makes everything, if you have a certain area of spirituality, there's a corresponding area of negative. So, how does that fit over here? So there's tov, lumas ra. There's the good, the ultimate good, and the ultimate bad. Before you can understand the bad, let's understand what does it mean if something is called good? Okay. In other words, time to define our terms. When you say that something is good, what do you mean when you say it is good? Well, say, it's good. Good is good. Nice. So, but what does good mean? Right? I don't know what the English dictionary would define good. That was a good supper. Okay, so tell me what made it a good supper and what would be a bad supper? What made a bad supper? You know, so well, it was a good supper. It filled me up. Was it tasty? Well, no. So then, that's still a good supper. Or, well, it was tasty. Did it fill you up? No. So, okay, I guess it could be tasty. It's got to fill me up. But now, was it healthy? So now, I guess we're going to talk about supper. Good's going to mean one thing. We're going to talk about clothing. Good means something else. So, like, what does good mean? What does good mean? That's an important thing to think about. So in this spiral L, we already explained earlier, Shabbatvekas Babori Olam Yeshne Shte Majegos. When we talk about cleaving to Hashem, there's two levels. Dvekas Shalolishma, El Hashem Hanovatanuk. There is a dvekas. There is a connecting to Hashem that is not altruistic. It has an agenda. And the agenda is the pleasure. They say that being close to Hashem is a big pleasure. Well, I like pleasure in life. And if that is a bigger pleasure than other things in life, then I'm going to work for that great pleasure. That is what we call shelo lishma. It's not for the sake of Hashem. And beis, dveikas lishma, connecting lishma. To connect for altruistic reasons, for the sake of connecting, because that's the will of Hashem and you don't want anything else. So now, we already explained that. So ma'utov. So what's good? So above and clearly, in a general term, the Rambam writes that there is in the soul two aspects. Koach ha'emes shebenefesh v'koach he'orev v'hatanek shebenefesh. There is the power of truth in the soul and the power of pleasure in the soul. Okay, so the human being likes to have truth. Likes to have pleasure. When we define something as good, next page, Reish Beis. So there's two possibilities of defining it as good. Number one, that thing is pleasant to me and I get pleasure out of it. That's one way of saying something is good. Most things that we say in life are good, probably give us pleasure. Or beis, hadavar amiti, the thing is true. Memela hu tov, consequently it's good. There's two ways of looking at it. From the truth perspective, from the pleasure perspective, depending on what your frame of reference is. So therefore, amusa ktov, mishtane, etzel b'nei adam. The concept of good will change depending on people. Ishel tanuga is a person whose focus in life is just pleasure. Kari l'davar tov, kunenu mimenu. He calls something good because he takes pleasure in it. Hayalo sheim noyim, if he has a pleasant name. Right? Hayalo sham noyim. He has over there some pleasure, so it's good. So, I enjoyed the meal, I got pleasure, it was a good meal. So now we're saying it's based on pleasure. I had a lot of pleasure, it was a really good meal. The coat makes me feel great, I look good in it, I get pleasure from that, it's good. The lecture was a pleasure to hear, it was good. So we define things in terms of pleasure. The Elish MS, on the other hand, a person of truth, focusing on that aspect of truth, Kisharaya Nakudamis, when you see a true point, you define it immediately as something good. So there's two ways. Now, the good will depend on your frame of reference. Are you using, as the Rambam says, the aspect of the person that seeks the truth? Or are you the aspect of the person that seeks the pleasure? So now, we quote now from Mishle, from Proverbs. It says, Ki lekach tov nosati lochem torasi al tazov. Hashem says to the Jewish people, for a good purchase, a leka, something you buy, a commodity. A good commodity I gave to you. What is that? My Torah, do not abandon it. So Hashem is calling Torah Tov, good. So the question is, Madua HaTorah Nikra Tov? Why is the Torah called good? Well, what do we know about the Torah? Ki yesh bo gam es havchana shel Moshe emes v'toras emes. There's an aspect of the Torah that is, Moshe is true and his Torah is true. Or we say as well, in the blessings, Asher Nosan Lano Torah Semes, he gave us a true Torah. So, on the one hand, Torah is good because it is true. Everything in the Torah is true. But also, V'yesh B'gamas Havchana Shehi Be'etzem HaTana Gamiti Shesh B'Briya. There also is an aspect of Torah that essentially, it is essentially the truest pleasure that is in the creation. Shekein Kamur, as it is well said, Tov hu yochol yos hemi b'chimes emes hemi b'chimes tanuk. Tov can be an aspect of truth or an aspect of pleasure. In other words, there is an aspect of pleasure to Torah as well. There are lots of pleasurable aspects to Torah. Some learning of Torah is pleasurable. The guidance can give you pleasure in life. Right? The mitzvahs were meant to be pleasurable. So now, so now let's try to relate this to serving Hashem with Dveikus. So therefore, Yesh Adam Shad Dveikus Babari Eslo Hitov Machmas HaEmes Shaba. There'll be a person whose Dveikus, his cleaving to Hashem, is going to be good because of the truth that it is. Yesh Hitov Machmas HaTanim Shaba. There'll be a good that comes out of the pleasure in it. So it comes out. Dveikus Shalo Lishma. He l'shem hanov atanuk, so dveikus, that is not for the sake of God, and it's for the sake of the pleasure. So v'hini kreis tov machma shel atanuk shebedover. It's good based on the pleasure of the aspect. Hashlem shel dveikus, but on the other hand, if the perfection of dveikus, shehi l'shma, that is done for the sake of the mitzvah, ein l'shem tanuk, that's not for pleasure. Ela machma shel machavi sedavak v'amite animotso yisbrach shechosm amemes. Rather, because a person wants to attach himself to the ultimate truth, which is Hashem, whose seal is truth. And Cain, if that's the case, that dveikus comes from the power of the truth of the soul. Okay, so now what he's done is he said, well, there's going to be two definitions of tov. And depending on which wavelength you are in life, that's how you are going to call it tov. So, when Lutzado says Dveikus Hashem is the only true Tov, he doesn't say Ki Rak Zehu Atov. This is the only good. Anything else you think is good is totally wrong. Right? So, he's saying there's two definitions of tov, depending on your framework. Are you a person that focuses on pleasure or a person who focuses on truth? If you focus on pleasure, the truth is dveikus is the only real pleasure in this world. It's only satisfying pleasure in this world. And therefore, if your dveikus is only for that purpose, if it's shalol lishma, then it is a true thing insofar as the world of pleasure. It will be more pleasurable than anything else in this world. And the only real pleasure. Everything else is fleeting. But there's a complete permanent pleasure. And that would make it good if you're a pleasure seeker. If you're a truth seeker, it is the ultimate truth. It's the ultimate reality that one should be living in. It's the only true reality that exists. Everything else is not real. Not true. So that makes a difference between you being lishma or not being lishma. Even if you're not lishma, it will still be tov, based on a framework of pleasure. On a framework of pleasure, it will be tov. While on the other hand, from a framework of emes, it's not tov. If you're doing it only for the sake of the mitzvah, then from the framework of emes, it's tov. From the framework of pleasure, it will also be tov, but I'm not interested in that framework. I wasn't interested in that. I didn't do it for that reason. I did it only because Hashem told me to do that. Based on a class we said last week, in last week's Parsha class, where we touched on the same subject, again, when we're talking about the Keser Shem Tov, right? So, we were saying, we brought down that another explanation of the definition of Tov, although we're not going to argue on what he's saying over here, but, the question is, like, you have to look at the sources. You have to know where does the Torah use the word tov. So there are other ways of looking at the Torah as being tov. A classic example, you have give me that small chumash. Right, there's a small blue chumash right in the corner. Let's just give you one pasuk as an example. Thank you. When Moshe Rabbeinu was born, what does the Torah have to say? When Yocheved gave birth to Moshe, Vatelet Bein Vatera Oso Kitovu, she saw that he was good. What does that mean, he was good? A baby is born, a baby's good. So what does that mean, baby's good? Baby's cute. Yeah, good baby. You'll find out soon if he's a good baby. Right? He said, as soon as he's born, it's Tov, he's good. So Rashi says, Kitovu, Kishinol, when he was born, Nismala Habayis Kula Ora. The house was filled with light. So what does that mean? It was completely filled with Kedusha. The house was completely filled with Kedusha. It was radiating Kedusha, holiness. So, based on that, many people suggest that Tov means something that is absolutely without any blemish, without any deficiency. We know that Moshe Rabbeinu was born completely circumcised. It's another chazal on this pasuk. He was good, totally circumcised. Totally circumcised means there's no blemish. Every child is born with a blemish. You need to be circumcised. The foreskin has to be removed. So he was complete perfection. Didn't even need a circumcision. And the holiness radiated from him. Tov, now where else do we have in the Torah Tov? Well, it says in the 6 days of creation, every day it says, Hashem saw what he did and he saw it was Tov, it was good. Well, what do you know about when Hashem does something? Does he do things that are not perfect? So in other words, the Torah is reflecting good is something that Hashem does. What Hashem does is good. Well, how does that work? Whatever he does is perfect. Hatsur tamim palo, the actions of Hashem are completely wholesome. When Hashem does something, it's absolutely perfect. It's absolutely perfect. No blemish. Moshe Rabbeinu was good. It was no blemish. How about if we apply the ones that he says? Kilek atov nasati lachem, the Torah is good. Any blemishes in the Torah? It's interesting. When is the Torah puzzle? When there's the most minute problem. One little letter is touching one letter. It means it has to be absolutely, 100%, perfect, without any flaw, without any blemish. So really, on a deeper level, what does Tov really mean? Tov means there's absolutely no blemish to it. Now, what would be a blemish? Well, whenever we do things, if we want to say that our actions are good, I'm a good person. Okay, another, what does it mean you're a good person? What does it mean you're a good person? Are you a good person or you're not a good person? So, how would we reflect that? Basic translations, the way the Bavli is saying, well, it depends if you're a pleasurable person or if you're a truthful person. Okay, a good person would be completely true. What would based on pleasure, how would you say you're a good person? Would I give pleasure to people? I don't know. It becomes difficult using these definitions he's using. If you use the definition we're using, there's no blemishes, absolutely perfection. Can't find anything wrong with it. That's good. So we'll be a good person. So we come back to our Mishkan. Come back to the Mishkan. Everything that Parshas Tetzaveh last week was teaching us. That the menorah represented the Keser Shem Tov, the crown of the good name. So a good name, what does a good name mean? So we explained that when you do activities, you can do things that are three ways you can do an activity. One is you're doing something that ultimately is there for not good purposes. Even when you're doing a mitzvah. When you're doing a mitzvah, you can do it in one of three ways. I'm doing one so that I can use it to hurt other people. I can use it to hurt other people. I'm learning Torah to be smart enough that I can beat everyone in Talmudic arguments. I make everybody feel like they're very not smart. And that gives me a lot of pleasure to do that. So that's learning Torah, mamish, that's shelo lishma. That's like lekanter. Lekanter, it's to bother people. And such a person, they say it's better he wasn't born. Better he wasn't born, such a person. So we definitely don't want to do things like that. But then you can do things that don't hurt anybody, and they're good things. I want to learn a lot of Torah. Why? Because I enjoy learning Torah. It's fun. It's a lot of fun. And I'm going to get some good self-esteem from that, and I'm in a very religious community, and the more Torah you know, the more honor they'll give you, and I want to get honor from that. We're not going to say that that's bad. That's not bad. That's not bad, the Torah is learning. But we wouldn't say it's altruistic either. And then you have the third level, which is, I do it. You know why I learned Torah? Because Hashem said so. That's all. If I like it, I don't like it, I learn Torah. Why? Because that's what Hashem wants me to do. Now, let's look at that. So now your intentions are good intentions. Your intentions are good intentions. What you're doing is strictly for the mitzvah and not for any other ulterior motives. And that's what it means that the menorah taught us about good intentions. Good intentions. I want to go over that parsha class again. But a good person is a person that does everything Hashem tells you to do it with the right intentions. Doing things lishma is good. That means you did it perfectly. When I do an action, how good is my action? Well, what's the most important part of the action? Well, obviously you have to do the action correctly, and that's measurable. That you could see. Putting on tefillin. Listen, either you put them on or you don't. And either you put them on right or you don't put them on. There's a halacha to put on tefillin. I mean, you know, you can physically put on tefillin perfectly. It was a good performance of the mitzvah. Yeah, but what were my intentions? Was I thinking about my business while I was putting on my tefillin? So I had no intentions. Was I thinking about the reward of the world to come? So that was selfish intentions. Was thinking about, I'm doing this because Hashem says this is what he wants me to do. And if I do this, this will connect me to him. This will enable me to fight my Yetzirah. And that's what Hashem wants me to do by doing this mitzvah. And therefore I do this. Well, then that's a perfect mitzvah. And that was a good mitzvah. That was good. So everything Hashem does is perfect. The Torah is perfect. The Sefer Torah has to be perfect. And if you want to be a good person, you have to do everything that Hashem wants you to do with the correct intentions. And that would be a good person.
Everything? Like, what if there's so many mitzvahs to do.
To the degree that you don't do them, then you can't be perfect. You're not a person without blemish.
But nobody's going to be perfect.
Okay, so you're not a perfect person. So you're trying to be a good person. But we could look at certain aspects, you know, was I good today? Was I good today? Today I did everything for the sake of heaven. Was I good right now? Let's focus on the here and now.
Does that make if the person doesn't do one mitzvah with pure intent, does that make them a bad person?
Well, you have to do tshuva for it, and then you could become a good person. No, it's just you're not a totally good person.
But it's like a point in time measurement. So it's like.
But that's part of you. Like, why didn't you do it with the right intentions? Why didn't you do it with the right intentions? Why didn't you do it because God told you? You forgot about God? Okay. So you forgot about God, then you're not without blemish. You can do things without thinking of Hashem. We're not saying you're bad. We're not even saying you're going to be punished. But we're not saying that you are tov. See, the problem is we use the word tov incorrectly. That's struggling again. We always used to using the word good to mean something else. Like I said, you know, the worst education children get in school is when they get their marks and teachers use the word tov incorrectly. They write on your paper, you know, what did you get? So what word do they use if you got the best score? Excellent. In Hebrew, mitsuyan, mitsuyan. Really, the word mitsuyan means something that you, from the word tsiyun, like a marker, something you can notice. Like that. That's really like outstanding means, oh, that's something to take notice of. That's what mitsuyan means. Now, if you're average, you know, they say tov, it's good. Based on our understanding, the top mark should be tov. Tov means without a mistake. Wouldn't that be better than outstanding? So from school, even in nice Jewish day schools, they give you the wrong meaning of the word tov. So when you're dealing with this word good, you know, good is like really the best term you could use. Remember, you know, I thoroughly believe the word good comes from the word God. For sure. Right? So, God, good. That's for sure. No? Is there any other way? What else?
A lot of it, but English doesn't work that way.
No, I'm just saying, where would it come from? What's the etymology? Go check it out. You know, everyone with your, well, you can Google it right now, Shelley. Right. Yesterday we were in the Gemara class, we were going through the gestation periods of animals. Before I could finish the topic, the guy said the answers. So what's the etymology of the word God? It has to be from the word good. And good is perfect, without any blemish. So that is, now if you look at, you know, when you're talking about what is tov, now you understand, I like this interpretation better than Bavlovi's. You understand, if you go back to Lutzado's statement, if you think about it, it was a very difficult statement to swallow. Remember, what did he say? Dveikus to Hashem, cleaving to Hashem, he says, ki ze, ki rak zehu atov, that's the only good. That's the only good. Anything else that a person thinks is good is wrong. It's not good. Since when is there only one thing that's good in the world? Well, because there's really only one thing that's without blemish, and that's Hashem. Even a Nike shoe after a while gets a blemish. It's only good for a while. You know, a beautiful pair of shoes, after the first day, they're already a little bit not totally level. They're already a little bit worn out. It's not a shoe without blemish. Everything in this world has a blemish. The only thing that doesn't have a blemish is Hashem. And therefore, if you attach yourself to Hashem, that can be the only good. If you attach yourself the way Hashem wants you to do that. There is no other good. There is no other good unless it is attached to Hashem. So now the question is, was that a good meal? Well, it only depends on one thing. When you ate the meal, were you attached to Hashem when you ate the meal? If that meal brought you to be attached to Hashem, then it was a good meal. If it was a meal that was not attached to Hashem, it was not a good meal. That's all. If you didn't make a bracha on it, it was a bad meal. If you ate it because you made a bracha, like a slob, may not have been a bad meal, but was a good meal. A good meal is, I ate it because Hashem told me to eat it, so I should be healthy enough to serve Hashem and all the other mystical reasons behind it. But I only was doing it because Hashem told me to do it. Hashem told me it's a mitzvah to live, so I'm doing a mitzvah to live. So now it was a good meal. So that really is the deeper understanding of good. He's saying, well, it depends if it's for pleasure, this and that. But that really is the only good thing that is there. Something that without blemish, total perfection. Total perfection is only Hashem or anything else that relates to directly to Hashem. And if a person connects to Hashem, truly l'shem shemayim, then that is the only good experience a person can have in this world. Everything else, we can use other terms, but we can't use the term tov for it.
There's certainly many references to God for good in etymology.
What did you say?
There are many references to God in the etymology of the word good.
Uh-huh.
I mean, it pops up a bunch of times.
Okay, anyway, that's got to be. Anyway, let's continue after the three diamonds.
I'm sorry, just...
Go ahead.
So the dvekas itself, the act of dvekas, is itself good.
Yes, that's the only good that exists.
So
now there's two levels of good, the way he is saying. I'm saying there's only one real good in dvekas, when you are doing it l'shem shemayim. When you're doing it for the sake of heaven, I am connected to Hashem only because he wants me to. That's the only reason I'm doing it. Right? That is the only good that exists in this world.
So a dvekas that's based on your
selfish needs?
Needs is less than good.
That's correct. And the way he is explaining, from the truth perspective, it's less than good, but from the pleasure perspective, if you want to define things by pleasure, it would still be a good. He's saying two levels of good. Good for pleasure. You know, I was saying, I don't know if it always applies. Can't always apply pleasure for everything in this world, being good or not. Are you a good person? So how do you use the pleasure perspective for that? I have trouble with that. A shoe can give me pleasure. So I'm a good person. I give myself pleasure. I get pleasure from myself.
Well,
I'm happy with myself. I'm a good person. That could be real trouble.
Yeah, it changes your paradigm. I mean, we normally think the truth is the highest.
So I was saying there's two different ways. So there's a false way of measuring good by pleasure. You know, it's a measurement. You know, we use the word good. If it gives me pleasure, it's good. But that would be a shalol l'shem shemayim. So he's saying it's good on two levels. If you're just looking for pleasure, it'll be the greatest pleasure. If you're looking for the emes, it's the greatest emes, but that's the difference between lishma and shanat, and shalom lishma.
So many times, Rabbi, we talked, and I know you said in Rush, you know, building that, you're building your bite in the world to come, and
right.
The mitzvah you do is another
right,
way.
Right, right.
But that's not lishem shemayim, because you're doing it for another purpose, which is you're invested in the world to come. So that takes away from your true intent.
That's true. So again, as we've said previously in the book, for most people need a little shalol lishma to do things in life. And that's just a necessary evil that exists. That's what he said. He says, since the sin of the first man, you know what? There is a part of you that is a selfish part of you that needs to be addressed. It needs to motivate you. It's not necessarily the highest level, but for the majority of people, if they don't get anything out of it, they're not going to do it. You know, it is true. Let's put it this way. It is true that you're building your bias, whatever. That is a true thing. And truthfully, that is the Ratzon Hashem. Hashem wants you to build this bias. Hashem wants you to do it. Okay, if a rabbi gets up every Shabbos and tells people, just do it because Hashem wants you to do it. And it's, you know, I'm not going to focus on it being pleasurable. You know, it's hard enough to get people to come if you're telling them it's pleasurable. So if I start telling them it's not even pleasurable, what's going to happen? So, you're right. But, so a real tzaddik doesn't do it because of that. A real tzaddik does it because that's the will of Hashem. Even if I get nothing.
But if something is pleasurable and it's a mitzvah, it doesn't take away from that. Like if you enjoy to learn Gemara, it doesn't take
as
away
long,
from
as
that.
Long as you're learning it not for that reason. I'm learning it because Hashem said I have to learn it. And therefore, let's say today it's not going to be pleasurable, I'm still going to learn it. There's reasons why learning is pleasurable for people. If we had to dissect it, we'll say, well, why is learning pleasurable to some people? Why? Let's start to analyze it. Well, certain people get a certain pleasure out of figuring out complex. Let's say people get a pleasure doing Sudoku puzzles. I get no pleasure out of that. I find that meaningless. But some people get, what's their pleasure? They get a pleasure of being able to solve a mystery, sort of. Like, be able to conquer the unconquerable. There's a certain pleasure to that, right? Well, other people can't do it and I can do it. And that's like a challenge. Some people like a challenge. So Sudoku is fairly mundane, right? Some people like the challenge of understanding something that other people can't figure out. And Gemara is definitely a very challenging thing. Okay, so guy goes every day. You know, he looks at the Gemara. It's a hard Gemara. He works on it. He gets it. Ah, I finally got it. That's why I've been working all day to get it. And I got it. Another day of pleasure, right? Now, what happens? He's working on a Gemara. He doesn't get it. Then what does he say? You know, you spend the whole day, you didn't understand the Gemara today. Is he happy?
No.
Not as happy as when he gets it. What's he going to do tomorrow? Well, tomorrow we're going to go back to the Gemara. Try it again. Still don't get it. Okay, now all of a sudden, the pleasure fact. Now, is he still learning it with the same gusto as he did 3 days ago or not? Now it depends why you were doing it. If you're doing it because that's what Hashem wants me to do, then that doesn't matter if I get it or not. Doesn't matter if I enjoy it. Not every day of learning may be enjoyable. Okay, you know what? I don't like, you know, and start going, sometimes you get certain Gemaras that the concepts are ones that your brain doesn't wrap your head around it. You're just not feeling comfortable with the whole concept. The concept is so abstract. You're getting tired of talking about abstractions that don't seem to be real. Is that thing stopped? Is it going?
No, the memory card stopped.
The memory card has stopped. Anyway. What else is new? Anyway, we got to keep going. And so the point is, so yes, learning Torah is enjoyable. Yes, it has to be enjoyable because if Hashem made it so, it has to be enjoyable. Because everything Hashem does will also, you know, if you're doing mitzvahs, it's the healthiest way to live. Hashem didn't have you do mitzvahs so you'll live long, but it is the healthiest. Everything has to be about it good. On every level has to be good. Even on a mundane level has to be good. But the question always is, why are we doing it? Why are we doing it? Again, why to get married? It's everything. It's why to get married? What do you mean? It's pleasurable to get married. If you have a good marriage, it's pleasurable. Is that why you got married? Careful how you answer that question. Right? What's the proper answer? What should a Jew say? I get married because?
God said so.
It's a mitzvah. If it's a mitzvah, then it changes the whole dynamics. It's a mitzvah. I'm doing it because God told me you have to get married. Why did God want you to get married? Now we can get into other reasons. Hashem wanted you to get married because that's the way you'll perfect your midos. And if you perfect your midos, you'll be similar to Hashem. You'll develop the tzelem elokim. And by developing the tzelem elokim, then you'll get close to Hashem. And then you get tveikus, and that was the name of the game. So if that's the case. Or no, I got married because I'm a lonely guy. And I'm depressed. And I'm going to have somebody to be depressed with, and I'll be happy. You know, I'll have someone to not be lonely with. I'm not saying that's a bad reason to get married, but it's a selfish reason to get married. But it's shalom lishma.
Take an example where there's no call it upside. Waiting 6 hours between meeting up. Other than the fact that God said to wait, I get no pleasure in waiting 6 hours so I can have an ice cream after I have a hot dog or something. You know what
okay.
I mean? Like
could be because of that you don't get any stomach aches.
I'm waiting 3 hours. You're not getting light.
Whatever. I'm just saying.
There's no pleasure. Okay. There's no upside to it. There's no upside.
You know why you're doing it, Stan, Shelly? No. Because if you don't listen, you're going to burn in hell.
No.
You're going to burn in hell. And I don't want to burn in hell.
No, because then you can say that for
that's avoidance. You can do a mitzvah not for the pleasure, but for the avoidance of the punishment.
But then again, that means that you're doing it not Shem.
That's right. That's what I'm
so
trying
to
show.
You can say that for everything we do.
That's right. So that's what I'm saying. Why are you doing it? Why am I waiting 6 hours? Because that's the will of Hashem.
Right.
But not everybody, you're trying to craft a case where I'm only doing it because it's the will of Hashem, and I'm telling you, no, every case could also be not because it's the will of Hashem. That was your question. You're trying to find a situation. It has to be because it's the will of Hashem. I'm telling you, no. I'm not doing it because the will of Hashem. I couldn't care less about the will of Hashem. But you know what? I know if I don't wait, I will go to hell, and I don't want to go to hell. And therefore, I'm doing it to avoid the pain, but not because I want to do the will of Hashem.
Then that argument would negate the pure intent of any mitzvah.
No, it's the pure intent depends on what you are thinking.
What your intention is.
What you are thinking. My intention is I don't care about getting rewarded. I couldn't care less if I get rewarded. I'm not doing it because I want to avoid going to Gehenna. I'm not thinking about those things. As a matter of fact, if you would tell me that this is a mitzvah to do that Hashem wants me to do, and if you would tell me by doing this mitzvah, I will go to hell. By doing this mitzvah, I will still do the mitzvah. Now that is a person who's 100% l'shem shemayim.
Right.
If let's say Eliyahu Navi came down from the heaven today and said, anybody who keeps Shabbos this week is going to hell. It's a new ruling. Right? And I said, well, I understand. Does that mean it's the will of Hashem or not? It's the will of Hashem to keep Shabbos. And what will happen to you is you will go to hell if you keep this Shabbos. But Hashem wants you to keep this Shabbos. Then the person will say, I still will go to hell. I'll still keep this Shabbos. Because why? Because Hashem wants me to do it. And the truth of the matter is, there's many things that we have to do in life that we would rather go to hell than have to do what you... well, it doesn't matter. So somebody, you'd rather go to hell than have to do the right thing. So that's what I'm saying. It's all depending on the intention. Intention is, what is the real reason why you are doing? That's why I always like to tell the story of the Vilna Gaon with the Esrog. There was no Esrog in Vilna for Sukkot. There wasn't one. No one's going to have an Esrog this year. A businessman travels by Vilna on the way to his house at some another city, and he happens to have an Esrog. So they call, Vilna Gaon calls him and says, you know, Please stay in the city. Sell us the Esrog. He says, no, I'm playing with my family. We need you. It's not going to have an Esrog. He says, I'm really sorry. I'm going to go. So Vilna Gaon says, we'll offer you $1 million. I don't need the money. I'm a rich guy. So Vilna Gaon says, okay, I'll tell you what. you will get the entire Olam Haba that comes with this mitzvah that I'm doing. I'm going to give it all to you. And you need all of my Olam Haba for this mitzvah. So the guy says, really? He says, yeah, I promise. And they wrote a contract. I had many stories like this. You had also the story of the Baal Shem Tov. I think it was, I won a Hasidish Rebbe. I don't remember. Same kind of story. Two different endings. So it's the Litvish version and the Hasidish version is the difference in the Litvak and the Hasid. So the version with the Vilna Gaon is, okay, fine. He stayed, he sold, got the rights, and the Vilna Gaon was beaming on Sukkot. He was happier than he ever, he was always happy, but he was the most happy in his whole life. And I said, why are you so happy? He says, the first time I could do a mitzvah, and I know for a fact I'm not fooling myself, that it's 100% for the sake of heaven, because I know I'm not even getting Olam Haba for this one. Right? So now that is clearly L'shem Shemayim. Right? Because I know I'm not even getting Olam Haba for it. Okay, now we don't suggest you do that for every mitzvah. But now when a chassid deals, when the Hasidish Rebbe had the same story, right? And the Hasidish Rebbe said, wrote the contract and says, you're going to get my Olam Haba for this. A chassid goes deeper than that. Right? So what happens? So the guy's staying in town and Sukkot. So he's staying in a hotel. So now, he needs a sukkah. He needs a sukkah. Right? He's a stranger, he's a sukkah. So you'd figure, you know, the rabbi, the community would have said, and we'll find a sukkah for you. The rabbi didn't say anything about the sukkah. He's kind of ignored the sukkah issue. This guy's in a hotel. The guy comes in shul. Usually you go strange to get invited. You know, a lot of people get invited. Will you come to my sukkah? Come to my sukkah. Nobody invites him. He comes to his hotel room and he finds his meal is all prepared in his room. he knocks on the inn keeper's, the keeper's not there. He goes to some houses, knocks on the door. People say, sorry, we don't got no room. And this guy, he has no sukkah here. He can't build one. It's yontif. So he starts figuring things out, and he's figuring, wait a minute, it's very odd to be in a Jewish city and nobody would let you into their sukkah. That can't be. So he figures out, puts two and two together, and the rabbi spread the word that no one's supposed to let him into their sukkah. The very rabbi who made the deal with him. So he comes storming into the rabbi's sukkah. And the deal the rabbi gave him was a little better than the Vilna Gaon's deal. The Vilna Gaon's deal is this mitzvah you get in Olam Haba. I don't remember which Chassidish Rebbe. So the Rebbe, the deal he signed with, I'll give you half of all my Olam Haba, not just this, all my Olam Haba. Anyway, so he goes to the Rebbe, and the Rebbe says, Yalgev, what did you do? You tricked me. You made me stare, and I don't have a sukkah to go in. No problem. You want a sukkah again? No problem. You know that contract we signed about the half of my Olam Haba? If you tear it up, and that part of it, if you release me from giving you my Olam Haba, then I'll let anybody into your sukkah. He goes, what? You tricked me. This was a dirty trick. This was a dirty trick. Really, you never plan on giving me Olam Haba. You just want to get my esrog, eh? You got my esrog with a false pretense that I'm going to get Olam Haba, and now that you got me stuck because I can't go to any sukkah, you're saying I'm going to have to give it back for the sukkah. The rabbi says, your choice. The guy's livid. He's pacing back. He goes back to the Torah. He's pacing back and forth. He's weighing the two options. He's saying, on the one hand, I have half of the Olam Haba of this great tzaddik, which is much more than I'm ever going to get. I never didn't eat a sukkah in my life. Back and forth. The friend says, okay. Goes back to the Rebbe, you win. Here's the document. Forget it. I'll give up my Olam Haba. The Rebbe says, okay, no problem. Spreads the word, and he's able to eat a sukkah. The whole holiday of sukkah comes and goes, and that guy didn't want to be near the Rebbe at all. At Yisro Chag, day after sukkah, the Rebbe calls him in. And the guy says, I'm going to say goodbye. So Rebbe says, I just want to explain to you what I did, so you shouldn't think I'm such a terrible guy. He says, do you think it's so easy to get my Olam Haba? Do you think it's easy to get Olam Haba? Do you think Olam Haba is something you just barter? He says, the kind of guy you are, you know, you just can't go and buy an Olam Haba. It's not something for sale. Your concept of Olam Haba is like a business deal. And guess in your own life, forget about what you bought from me. Everything in your life you always thought was a business deal. Yeah, you always figure you're getting Olam Haba. As a businessman, it's a business deal. It isn't a business deal. And the truth of the matter is, I can't even sell you my Olam Haba. True or not, I'm not going to get into the point. I can't. Even when you had the thing, you didn't have it. He says, and you know, what you bought for me wasn't worth very much because you really didn't do anything. But when you were willing to give up that Olam Haba for the mitzvah, now you got your Olam Haba. You understand? That's the Hasidic way. Now you understand? He was willing to give up a whole Olam Haba. What? Just now, why was he doing it? It can only be because at the end of the day, I do it because how can I not do what Hashem wants me to do? So that's, Hashem will give us situations in life where we could prove if we're doing it for the sake of Hashem or not. Usually, Hashem gives us enough unpleasant situations to have to live through, and the only reason we're doing it is because Hashem said so. And if you do it with a smile, even though it's because Hashem said so, something you wouldn't want to do, that would be the definition of doing it something that is very good. So that guy eating in his sukkah was a good mitzvah of eating in his sukkah. Okay, we'll continue this topic of Lishma tomorrow.